this morning, joined by Appellate Court Judge Barry Vaughn. Judge Vaughn, first off, morning. How are you, sir?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
Good. You know, the Appellate Court just sworn in last week, and I got a chance to meet and talk with Barry yesterday. I guess it was the end of last week, and I was glad he was able to join us because, as you heard me say, one of the unappreciated people in the system is the judge. I mean, that's... And I was sharing that with Judge Vaughn last week, and especially when it comes to the appeals court, you know, because, and as I was telling you, Judge Vaughn, I've always thought the appeals court is the tacit admission that humans make mistakes, and there's got to be a way to rectify them inside the system.
I agree with that. We all make mistakes. As a judge, I've been a judge 18 years, and I make mistakes all the time. You and I talked, though, I think you thought that was maybe the most important job was appellate court, and I kind of disagreed. Because I think maybe the trial court's the most important. And that's when someone has a court case, whether it's someone ran into your car or you get stopped for speeding and want to fight it or whatever, the trial court's your level of recourse. And most people can't afford to go to the appellate court. If they lose at the trial level, that's pretty much it for them. So that's their one chance at court and justice. So, and I think we talked, I had a case one time when I was a private lawyer. And when we finished, the judge was ruling against my clients. And I said, Judge, I've got some cases, I think, so you should rule the other way. And he said, well, you may be right, but if your clients don't like it, they can appeal. And I said, Judge, they don't have any money. I'm probably not going to get paid today, so they don't have an appeal. This is it for them. And I've always kept that in mind, that the trial court really is, to me, maybe the most important job.
You know, and you know why? After listening to you talk, you had an effect on me when you said this. And here's part of this conversation, as Barry and I just met last week. As I was saying, I have out of all the interviews I've ever done with judges and things along that line, not one time memorably has the cost of justice ever come up saying, oh, yeah, we'll see you in appeal. Well, I'll see you in the Supreme Court. Well, only if you can afford it. And, you know, that admission in and of itself, that justice costs, that's a tough one for me.
It is, and that's one thing the Supreme Court's always trying to come up with programs and new things to make court more available to pro se. In lawyers, we say pro se, but self-represented people that can't afford a lawyer. We try and make it more available and more accessible, but it's hard. People are scared. They've never been to court before most of the time, and we have self-help websites online. I was involved in helping set up a self-help website here where you could go to the local library and access a computer and log in and get forms downloaded where you can help fill out some basic stuff. But even then, when you go to court, you don't know what witnesses you need to have, and you don't know what laws or what evidence is admissible. And so it's a difficult process for someone who does not have a lawyer.
And don't have a lawyer and can't afford a lawyer. That's why Lincoln Land Legal Services, who I'd done some work for back in one of my previous incarnations that we were talking about before we were on the air, that, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I've got a problem with my landlord. I've got a problem with, and, you know, a problem with, I bought this new car and there's a problem, you know, that there was somebody out there to help them because they couldn't afford it. You know, it's one of the trying things here. You've been a judge 18 years. What's the most important thing you've learned behind the bench that people wouldn't know otherwise?
Well, I think they probably suspect or hope, but always listen to both sides. Sometimes you get an impression when you hear the first side and you think, yeah, that's, they got a point, but always listen to the other side and see what the other side of it is. There's obviously two sides, or they wouldn't be in court. If it was an open and shut case, they would have settled it before they got there. So always listen to both sides. And I have a friend and a lawyer when I was in private practice and lived in Fairfield for a few years. I had a friend that when I first got elected judge, he said two things: always take the job seriously, never take yourself too seriously. So I try and keep a sense of humor and keep in mind that I'm just a placeholder for a few years and I'm not irreplaceable. Somebody will follow behind me. And the other thing he told me was try and grow with the job, don't swell with it. And try to keep those two things in mind.
That sounds like a good friend when it comes to that, because you are held apart to a certain degree. You are elevated to a certain degree. You judge people. There is a special respect that I think that goes with the judge and the bench. While at the same time, you've got to be a human being. How do you ensure you keep that element going, that you're not just a judge, but that you're experiencing life, you learn from things that go on around you and use them when you are a judge?
Well, it's kind of like when we have a jury trial. If anyone's ever served on a jury, one of the instructions you give the jurors is you are allowed to use your common everyday experiences in life and making decisions and judging credibility. And really, everybody's a judge one time or another. When you raise kids, you know, your kid, you walk in and something's broken. Who did that? I don't know. Well, you're judging their credibility right there. So we all have some experience at it. Yeah. And it is a constant battle to keep your own personal biases and prejudices and idiosyncrasies, keep those in check and try and decide based on the law and based on the facts and apply it fairly. That's always a challenge for anyone, judge or anyone else.
I wonder how many times you and I have used the word fair since we started 6 minutes ago. Fair.
I hope a lot.
Fair. Fair. Equal playing, level playing field. You know, I found it interesting that Judge Vaughn also has a little fun wearing a zebra suit.
Yes, I got my referee license, IHSA license, in 2011, much to my wife's chagrin and disappointment. She told me when I got my I came home thrilled to death. I'd signed up online and paid my fee and got my IHSA license, and I came home and proudly told my wife, and she said, "What were you thinking? Don't you make enough people mad as judge? Why do you want to make a whole town mad at you?" But I enjoy it. It's I've been doing it, like I said, since 2011, and keeps you involved with kids. You're out on the basketball floor and seeing good basketball. You have a different perspective than the fans, but you still see some good basketball. Hopefully, help stay in shape a little bit. And it's really a lot like judging. You're watching things happen, and you're trying to apply the rules. And I tell people in court, if somebody gets out of line, I hold them in contempt. On the basketball floor, if they get out of line, they get a technical. So, you know, some of those things are similar. You try and be fair, even when you don't always know what the rule is that applies. Sometimes in the heat of action of a basketball game, something happens you haven't seen before. But if you try and be fair, listen to both sides, listen to both coaches, and then they feel like you're giving them a fair listen and a fair shake and trying to apply it fairly, they don't get too upset with you. Same in court. You know, we were talking about the appellate court correcting mistakes. Sometimes in the heat of a trial, somebody makes an objection, you make a ruling, it may be wrong. But if you're trying to do it fair and trying to listen to both sides, most attorneys accept that. Now, there is an appellate process where if it's a really big mistake, that can be fixed. But as long as you're trying to be fair and listen to both sides, I think they're very similar.
Yeah, and then when I played basketball, I mean, that was, yeah, I know, but there's a rule book. You know, when you get right down to it, there's a book in your back pocket you can go to and say, see your coach, you know.
Yeah.
Same way as with a judge. So 18 years, have you always lived in Hamilton and McLeansboro, lived in McLeansboro?
For the most part, I grew up in McLeansboro on a small farm south of McLeansboro. We raised cattle and hogs and hay and corn and beans and wheat and just typical small farm, small tractors. We didn't have the big fancy equipment you have now. I had a little two-cylinder John Deere tractors that we drove, and I went away to school. My first year I went to Eastern Illinois University of Charleston. Then I transferred to Southeast Missouri at Cape Girardeau. Really liked it a lot. I was on the debate team down there. And then I moved back to Carbondale and finished my undergraduate degree at SIU. And I'd always wanted to go to SIU Law School, so that kind of seemed a good fit. So I went to SIU Law School. While I was still in law school, I had worked summer interned for the state's attorney in Jefferson County, Kathleen Allen, and liked being in the state's attorney's office. So I thought, I'm going to get a job there. They were going to hire me and couldn't come up with the funding. So then I thought, I may just run for a job. And it's a long story, but I ended up running for state's attorney in Wayne County in Fairfield while I was still in law school in my last year. I was nominated during the school year, and then the election was during the fall, of course, after I graduated. But I lived in Fairfield then. I was elected, served two terms, and then when I left office, I stayed in Fairfield for six more years and had a small private practice there. Then my father-in-law passed away. My dad got cancer, and we moved back to McLeansboro, which isn't that far, but moved back to McLeansboro to be closer to family. And a vacancy came open, and so I ran in 2002 and was elected judge. So other than the 12 years I lived in Fairfield, I've lived in McLeansboro my whole life.
You know, so the Second Judicial Circuit Court is where Judge Vaughn will be working. When will be your first day behind the bench?
Well, I'm going to be sworn in on January the 4th. Justice Overstreet has graciously agreed to do the swearing-in ceremony, so we will do that at the appellate courthouse in Mount Vernon. And then I'm not sure when my first day actually hearing oral arguments or cases will be in Mount Vernon. The appellate court is way different. In trial court, we're in court every day. You know, lawyers, sometimes you're in your office and you're working and you have a court case and you go to court. Well, judges, you're in court every day. But at the appellate court, you're listening or you're reading records, you're reading briefs, you're reading transcripts of other judges' trials. So we have oral argument, I believe, 1 week a month, and you spend the other 3 weeks of the month reading and researching and writing your opinions and talking to your clerks and going over what you think the law is that applies. And so more office work, less court work.
And
I'm a little nervous about that. I've never done that before. So anything new is a little nervous in the beginning.
Yeah, but change is good. And every once in a while, the cheese needs to get moved anyway. Keeps you on your toes,
yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
I tell you what, Judge Vaughn, it's really interesting to meet you this morning. And I'll tell you what, I'll remember this conversation for a long time. And because of this simply, and I have had court fees, and I've had to pay lawyers for this or that and retainers and things along that line and escrow, and you've got a house. And I mean, just the stuff of life. Not everything's a doggone crime, right? Right. You know, there's other things that have got to go on. But the cost of justice is going to be the thing that I find it reassuring that you understand that that person who might have had a problem doesn't have unlimited resources to fight through the judicial system. And I tell you what, I really appreciate the fact that you knew that and brought that up. And Barry was straight to, no, you know, when it comes to appeals court, I know you understand it's important, but look, people can't afford that. The trial is the important thing. And that's going to be my takeaway. And I'm really interested to watch your career going forward and how that point of view is incorporated into your actions.
Well, I hope I'm able to bring that to the court. Like I said, it's a new experience for me, and I don't know how much of that transfers over. The Supreme Court is trying to address the issues. They changed some rules in the last year, and the state legislature changed the rules. It's harder on counties because they've cut back some of the fees counties can collect. And the county court system is funded by people, you know, user fees and court costs. So that's been a drain on the counties. And with the state budget, there is not as much state money coming down to the counties either. But you can't make justice so expensive that people can't afford justice. So I'm not sure where the balance, you know, always trying to do a balancing test a lot of times in court. I'm not sure where the balancing test comes out on that. But we have to be mindful that for people to get justice and have access to justice, we have to make it affordable or easier to understand where they can do it themselves.